Baca v. Trejo. And Mr. Frisell, we'll hear from you.
May it please the Court, John Frisell for Mr. Trejo. Of course, this case presents the issue of whether the district court committed plain error by accepting Mr. Trejo's guilty plea of transporting money derived from drug trafficking with the intent, specific intent to promote the drug trafficking without any evidence in the record of the specific intent to promote the underlying drug trafficking. And I will be arguing that this does meet all four elements of the plain error test. It's plain error that affects substantial rights and the fairness of the proceedings. And I'll just answer questions if there are any as I go along. The first is that this is plain error. The defendant, in order to uphold a conviction for money laundering promotion, the government must prove specific intent to promote the underlying crime, and that in this case was obviously drug trafficking. But there was no.
What do you mean by prove? This is a guilty plea.
Right. But there wasn't, under the factual basis, there wasn't any evidence submitted in the proffer by the government of an intent.
Well, it seems to me, I mean, there was maybe plenty of evidence that from which a jury reasonably could conclude. Now, there was no direct evidence. It may not have been the strongest case, but it seems to me that the evidence was there that could have been submitted to a jury, and if a jury had returned a verdict of guilty, make drawing inferences from the fact that, from all of the facts in this case, which the people knew that they were ferreting drug money, they were ferreting like $360,000, so a jury would be able to reasonably assume that it was not a one-time mule, that nobody would trust that to a one-time mule. And if it was not a one-time person, they were obviously working for an organization. The jury could conclude all of that, and that they would have the specific intent to further a specific illegal operation, that is, the drug operation.
And that, Your Honor, is the argument that the government relies on, citing this court's opinion in Valuk, I believe, if I pronounced that correctly. But I believe that the reliance on that argument is misplaced in this case because it is in a different procedural setting. That would be in Valuk, and in what the court is suggesting is review of a jury's verdict where this court does entertain all inferences in the light most favorable to.
You tell me it takes stronger evidence to support a guilty plea than it does to support a verdict of guilt?
I'm suggesting it takes more evidence to uphold a guilty plea as knowing and voluntary.
What's the best case on this?
I have Palmer, which is cited in the brief, which also cites two other cases out of the.
Guilty plea?
I'm sorry?
Is that a guilty plea case?
Yeah, yes, Your Honor. Palmer was a guilty plea case.
Back a resume similar?
No, it was a possession of a firearm in furtherance of drug trafficking, and this court found that there was no there wasn't an adequate factual basis for the plea.
Was it an A2 case?
I'm sorry.
A promotion money laundering versus a transaction?
No. This addressed the issue of an adequate factual foundation for a guilty plea, but it was the defendant pled guilty to possessing a firearm in furtherance of drug trafficking, and this court held that there wasn't sufficient facts submitted in the proffer. In combination.
Do you derive any comfort or support from the Cuellar case in which the Supreme Court reversed us recently?
Unfortunately, I looked at that last night.
It was a money laundering case.
Right. I looked at that last night, and it doesn't seem to apply to this case because of the Judge
Not
Stevens.
Not exactly, but it does focus on the mental element that must be proven. In your case, I think, it's somewhat analogous.
I looked at that last night, and
okay, well, I'm sorry. If you don't think it's...
I didn't see it as helping, but... Okay. And so I do draw the distinction between review of a jury's verdict and review of whether or not a defendant's plea is knowing and voluntary and supported by the facts. And
in addition to that, the judge went over with the defendant time and again, do you understand the elements of this crime? He spelled out the elements of this crime. Do you understand it? Yes. And on that basis, you plead guilty. Yes.
The judge listed, it's true, the judge did list the three elements, which included the promotion, intent to promote. But the problem in this case is that intent to promote is a term of art that requires specific intent rather than just knowing that this was going to be going back to drug traffickers and might promote, as this court held in Brown, knowing that it would promote isn't sufficient. The defendant actually has to specifically intend to promote the underlying activity.
What kind of evidence do you suggest that the government would have had to have offered to sustain an intent to promote?
I think in this case, what happened was that if the judge asked Mr. Trejo no questions about what he actually did, he just asked if he understood the elements, he understood the punishment. He went through the Rule 11.
Well, would it have been sufficient if the judge had asked him, did you intend to promote? And he said, yes. What would that have?
I would say that the judge should, in this kind of case with specific intent, needs to say, what was this money for? What was going to happen with this money when you took it?
Even if he had admitted it before the judge, that would have not been sufficient to uphold the guilty plea.
If he had admitted, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I would say in some cases it may not be because the elements of the offense as read to the defendant does not include the specific intent. It just says when the judge reads the elements to the defendant, and in this case he read the elements as with the intent to promote, but he didn't explain that this doesn't just mean that you know that this is illegal money, but that you have the specific intent to further the underlying activity. And that's why I think in this case, or cases of this type, it would be helpful for judges to say, what exactly did you do? Why were you doing it? What did you know? And what was the purpose of this money that you were taking to...
Or for the prosecutor to make sure that's in the resume.
Or the prosecutor. And the prosecutor offered no evidence of that. Now, the government in its brief has offered the affidavit of one of the arresting officers. But that affidavit only contains speculation and conclusions based on his prior experience. It's not specifically tailored to this case. It just says, in my experience, this is what happens. But there was nothing in the factual resume submitted by the prosecutor or in the affidavit that the government relies on in its brief relating specifically to Mr. Trejo's specific intent to further the underlying activity. And another thing, under the fourth prong, obviously, this court has discretion whether or not to send it back, to remand it for for Mr. Trejo to plead anew.
Did Mr. Trejo admit that he knew that his cohort was taking a gun to drug traffickers?
I don't believe he admitted that. The officers questioned both separately, but I don't believe the officers questioned Mr. Trejo about the co-defendant, who was in a separate car. And I don't believe that the officers questioned Mr. Trejo about the guns. I think that the questioning was related to where are you going, and Mr. Trejo said, yeah, I was taking this to Hidalgo, Mexico, the money to Hidalgo, Mexico. And I was hired by a person named Jose.
He charged with knowledge of that because they were aiding and abetting each other and engaged in a conspiracy? Would he have been charged with the knowledge that his co-conspirator aided and abetted had?
Is the question if he could have been charged in a substance count?
No. Was he charged with the same knowledge?
In other words,
you're usually, charged with the same knowledge that the other people had if you were part of the conspiracy.
Well, in a conspiracy, even though it's charged a conspiracy, this court and
aided and abetted.
Well, this was charged a conspiracy, I believe. And the government does have the burden, even a conspiracy case, to prove the same mens rea as the underlying offense. So even though it was charged as a conspiracy, they would still have to prove the same mens rea as the underlying. And that cited my brief, so I think that's Peterson.
Was he handled in the same proceeding with his cohort? Were they both in the courtroom?
There were two defendants, Mr. Trejo and his co-defendant, but then there was a third defendant being rearranged in the same proceeding. So it's
was Mr. Trejo present when Mr. Villanueva was going through the factual basis for his plea?
Yes, and the prosecutor submitted the factual basis as to both of them at the same time.
I seem to recall, maybe I have a note or memo that they asked both of them if they knew about this gun being taken to the drug traffickers. Was that all true? And Mr. Trejo said yes. So I'm concerned about whether that should be attributed to him or not. It may be a mistaken note I have.
We haven't exhaustively
read the record, of course, yet.
I don't think there was a specific question as to the district court did ask Mr. Trejo, now, is what the prosecutor stated true? Do you agree with that? He said yes. But the prosecutor, when talking about the guns, was only talking about what Mr. Villanueva, the co-defendant, told the agents when they were arrested. And he said, I was taking these guns. And he was working for someone else with a different name than Mr. Trejo was. But there was no specific question about, Mr. Trejo, did you know about these guns? Are you admitting that you knew about these guns? And unless there are any further questions, I'll.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Frisell. Mr. Turner, for the United States.
May it please the Court, Jim Turner for the United States in this case. The question properly, the issue before the Court is under plain error review. And the question is whether the district court had a sufficient factual basis from which he could subjectively find that there was a basis for a finding of guilt in this case. In the first prong of the plain error analysis, then, is whether or not there's error. We would suggest that there was no error because the district court did have a sufficient factual basis, notwithstanding the fact that the prosecutor did not spell out the specific intent aspect of the case.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, ma'am.
As I understand it, there's a stringent specific intent requirement, and that purpose of that is we are expecting strict adherence to that standard to help ensure that the money laundering statute punishes conduct really distinct from the underlying unlawful activity. How is this distinct? How is this any different than just a drug delivery, drug trafficking? How does it become money laundering under A2?
Well, under A2, Your Honor, and this, Your Honor asked a question with respect to the Cuellar case. The indictment in this case is a reaction to this court's panel opinion in Cuellar, which was a design to conceal case. In this case, we had transport with the intent to promote. This court in the United States versus Martinez, which is not cited in the briefs, it's found at 151 Fed 3rd 384 at page 389. This was in case in which the element, intent to promote, was based upon the amount of money being transferred back for fronted contraband.
Is it a jury trial?
Excuse me.
A jury trial or a guilty?
This was a jury trial. That was a jury. Martinez was a jury trial, Your Honor.
When the court reviewed the record, they had all of the testimony there.
In toto. And if he had lodged an objection to this case, the district judge would have heard, in effect, this affidavit that I cite in the brief is the outline for the statement of facts. The last paragraph, which we had put out in the brief in total, lays out the fact that this is what they routinely do. In Cuellar, in a footnote, the Supreme Court notes, that what they routinely do, from what they routinely do, one can infer this was their intended result. In this particular case, they routinely package these drugs, stuff them into the compartments, a hidden compartment in the vehicle, pick up the drug proceeds from the distribution in the United States, and transfer it back to Mexico. And that's specifically what was happening here. Now, I hope I've answered your question.
I just am not sure if I'm clear how that's distinct from just a drug trafficking offense. What makes it promotion?
Well, I think the promotion is that by, I think with Martinez, they said that by taking the proceeds back and paying for it, you're advancing the overall organization.
That was a jury trial that they had the whole record of everything that went on.
And again, you know, all the judge has to be here is satisfied that there's a factual basis. And I would suggest that this record supports a factual basis. That's precisely what they're doing. Had it gone to trial,
well, how was the defendant to know that he was, in effect, promoting?
Well, he's in effect.
He intended to promote.
This is a conspiracy. This is again a conspiracy. There is an agreement. He's part of this agreement to commit the underlying violation. So there's an imputed knowledge and intent to him. In fact, this case, with respect to that, you asked a question about Villanueva and his relationship. Initially, when they were stopped, Villanueva denied knowledge that the second vehicle, which was driven by Trejo, was in any way related to this case. When, in fact, Trejo not only said he knew Villanueva, they were son-in-law Trejo to father-in-law Villanueva. So, and they were in constant communication. The record reflects that they were in cellular telecommunication throughout the trip. So they had, from those circumstances, the judge can infer that he knew what was going on and what was testified for.
I don't want to interrupt you too much, but do you think you can draw an analogy or draw some help from the A1 cases on intent to promote? It seems to me the definitions are identical.
Yes, and I believe
okay.
We can.
If that's the case, then the cases are replete with references to the fact that even if the activity ended up promoting the unlawful activity, or even if the defendant engaged in knowing promotion, it's not enough. He's got to know he's advancing that business somehow. How's that the case here?
Well, I think it's circumstantial, and again, Your Honor, it's circumstantial, but it's a necessary inference that if he's taking the money from a drug dealer, first off, he sets the car in place, he knows it's being concealed. When he gets to the border, he's already denied he's not going to report these funds. They're going to go back to the person that the funds originated from. The only inference that can be drawn from that is that he's promoting and advancing this, and he knows he's doing that with his transportation. So under the plain error analysis, and again, we're under plain error, and they bear the burden of proving this.
Why can he be just somebody who was associated for this one trip and not know what was happening, except he was probably doing something wrong, but he didn't know exactly what he was.
And that was the issue drawn at sentencing, Your Honor, because he tried to secure for himself a reduced sentence based upon his role in his offense. And the district judge addressed this at length, and what it came down to was the amount of money that was entrusted to him, and the judge rejected this entirely.
Is that in the factual basis?
It's not in the factual basis, but again,
under bargain? That we can't take that into account, can we?
Yes, you can, Your Honor. Under plain error review, the court can. It's anything that's temporal to the record that's within the record related to this. And if you look at, I believe the case I would cite would be United States versus Adams, which is at 961 Fed Second 505. That was a harmless error analysis predating the restructuring of Rule 11.
The amount of money was in the statement of.
Yes, the amount of money was indeed in the statement of the recitation. In fact, they both claimed joint responsibility for a total of $330,000. The lion's share of the money was in Mr. Trejo's car, $169,000. He thought he had $180,000. The guns reduced the amount of money that Mr. Villanueva was transporting. So I would suggest
that's all you had, though. You'd admit that wouldn't be enough, just a large amount of money.
A large amount of money coupled with the other circumstances. The other circumstances from the way the money is picked up, the way it's concealed, his knowledge, the fact that when he gets to the border, he knows he has an obligation to report that amount of currency, and his express declaration he's not going to report it.
You're relying on the gun and Villanueva's statement it was being taken to drug traffickers? Or is that, did Mr. Trejo, did he hear that and did he say that was right?
Again, Your Honor, from circumstances, they were in constant telephone communication, the fact that they're related.
I'm talking about in the courtroom.
No, he did not. Well, he did admit he knew where they were taking the funds to Mexico, and that was admitted at sentencing as well when there was this discussion about the reduction in offense. Okay. And that also, I think, impacts the third prong of the plain error analysis.
The gun is not key to
The gun is not key to the Trejo. It's the cash. It is the amount of cash that's key in the relationship to Villanueva. And on the third prong of the analysis, how it adversely affects his substantial rights. At the rearrangement, Mr. Trejo was dead set on pleading guilty. In fact, his only question to the judge, when are you imposing my sentence? When it came time for sentencing, the only objection was to have he get his sentence reduced by virtue of his role in this offense, claiming it was limited, which was rejected by the district court. So under the third prong, I don't think there's any adverse effect of it to his substantial rights.
Does that square with the fact that, at least from the defense perspective, he pled guilty to something that isn't a crime?
Well, no, I disagree with that initial premise, Your Honor. I have a problem with that premise. When he pled guilty, he had no concerns whatsoever. At two points, as Judge Jolly pointed out, the magistrate judge explained the elements of the offense, including intent to promote. The judge outlined the elements of the offense, including intent to promote, and he understood them at that time. When the facts were set out, he accepted those facts as being consistent with what he did, and the only omission in that factual recitation is the specific intent to promote aspect of it, which the government believes comes from the fact that they routinely put these money in packages and vehicles and ship them to Mexico that way, back to the source. They front the marijuana, cocaine, whatever contraband. Distributions are picked up at different stash houses. They move it back, hire drivers, they hire it back to Mexico, the source.
It seems to me he had to know that he was working for a drug ring because he knew that the drug ring survived on purchases and transactions, and that if that money were not transported back to Mexico, the drug ring would crumble.
It would terminate.
It was an essential part of it. And then whenever he crossed the border and did not declare it, he knew he was not declaring it because he wanted to get to the people who were in the drug ring in Mexico so it could continue to promote that particular ring. And not only that, but he knew he was working for a guy named Jose who had to be an agent of some ring. So he had to know that he was promoting specific drug activity he may not have known the identity of it, but there was some specific drug ring whose interest he was promoting. He had to know that.
Now, I don't think I can summarize it better, or theory of the case, Your Honor.
A lot of that is not really, it's stuff he didn't admit to, right?
It's in the record. He admitted to the money. He admitted to what he was traveling. He knew that it was drug proceeds. He knew this cash was drawn from drug proceeds. He talked to Jose throughout.
Jose was the person trying to tell him to get the money to Mexico.
He admitted that he knew the money was going to
Mexico. Yes.
Drug traffickers.
But he didn't know. A lot of these cases under A1 with intent to promote, it's a middleman. It's a man that lives and breathes the organization. As I can see it, there's no inference from the factual resume and the proffer that indicates that this was one organization delivering to another. There's no indication these men were actively and regularly employed such that they know how the business ran, or that it was anything more than just a payoff, which the cases under A1 say in and of itself is just insufficient to show intent to promote.
Well, I think with the agent's statement in the record that they are fronted, that it is more than just that. Fronting would be they're selling on consignment, one organization consignment, perhaps two branches in Mexico. And again, this is plain error, and it's the district court's subjective finding that a crime's been committed and is the crime that was charged. I mean, the necessary inference is that he knows he's taking this money back. If he doesn't get this money back, this terminates the entire transaction, the entire operation. So it's necessary for those funds to be returned to Mexico. And again, that brings us to the fourth prong. Under these circumstances, the question is whether this court should exercise its discretion and reverse and send this case back. And I would suggest under these accumulation of circumstances, you should not exercise that discretion under the fourth prong, under the plain error analysis.
Thank you, Mr. Turner. Okay. Mr. Frizzell, you have some time for rebuttal.
I did want to address the court's concerns about if Mr. Trejo was traveling with this money, that he had to know it was for a drug ring.
Okay, he contacted Jose.
Right.
Did he think Jose was a Sunday school teacher raising money for a church?
That isn't my, that's not the issue I'm raising.
Did he have to know that Jose is the agent of some drug ring?
Who
do you think he was? I mean, does the district court have to take leave of all of its common sense from the reasonable inferences from this kind of evidence?
My position on that is that the fact that the defendant knows that it's going to a drug trafficking organization doesn't prove that he's agreed to promote the drug trafficking organization.
Well, how does he agree to anything else if he knows that essential to that, the survival and the advancement and the promotion of that drug organization, it has to have money? And he knows that he is going to lie at the border about whether he has the money or not, so that he can get that money to Jose or whoever the agent is of this particular drug ring. How is that more than anything other than an intent to promote Jose's drug trafficking business?
For specific intent, I would argue that the defendant has to know what that money is actually for and what it will be used for. Will it be used to reinvest into the
What would it have been used for in the world other than drug trafficking?
It could have been used to it could have been spent by the traffickers and not reinvested. And spending of proceeds is not promotion of the underlying offense.
In other words, if they had laundered the money themselves and used the drug proceeds to get front organizations for themselves, that's not promoting a specific illegal activity?
It's only promotion. Because I think it goes to what Judge Boyle was raising, is the merger of the offenses that has to be used to go back into the underlying offense. If it's just spent, if it's money that's then spent on a house or whatever that the drug traffickers want to spend it on, that doesn't promote the underlying offense until they reinvest it. And there wasn't any evidence that Mr. Trejo knew what the purpose of these proceeds was.
So money laundering is not, if you promote money laundering from money drugs, that's not promoting an illegal crime that's part of a drug offense. I can't see that. I mean, money laundering is part of the offense, just like pushing that money from Florida to Mexico into legitimate businesses that hide this money. I mean, it's all part of one illegal drug offense.
I would argue that Justice Scalia's point in Santos is appropriate or apropos to this, because it does raise the problem of merger of offenses. When if the offense is drug trafficking, then merely possessing the proceeds doesn't equal another offense. And there wasn't any evidence in this case that Mr. Trejo knew what the purpose of these proceeds was. And also, I think that analysis goes more to a case where the court is reviewing whether the jury made rational inferences based on the evidence at trial, not to whether a defendant's guilty plea is knowing and voluntary and supported by an adequate factual basis. And as Judge Boyle brought up during the government's time, the purpose of the factual basis in the Rule 11 is to make sure the defendant is pleading guilty to something that's actually a crime and not just to something that they believe they did wrong. And the government did spend a lot of time talking about the inferences that could be drawn from the facts, but again, I would submit that only applies to the standard review on sufficiency of the evidence, not on a Rule 11 knowing voluntary plea. And I'm out of time, so thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Frisell. You were court-appointed, and the court would like to express its appreciation for your representation of this defendant. You've done a very fine job for him, and the court likes to express its appreciation for it. Call the next case of the day.